Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Marek Larwood.
Hello, film lovers and people who just think films are all right.
Yeah, to film fans and film dangos,
film,
welcome.
Film dangos?
Yeah, they're people who think films are all right.
Sounds a little bit racist.
Only in your head.
Yeah, you're right.
Your guilt-ridden white head.
Yes, I suppose you're all right. Well, here we are. It's another week. Buddy, the Film Fandango dog is very excitable again, so there will be some dog-related noise in the background.
You lucky people. So, we're going to talk about some more films. We've gone back to our old friend documentaries this week. Another Oscar-nominated documentary that we've been watching is The Art of Killing, which many people have actually predicted might actually grab the Oscar.
The Act of Killing.
What did I say?
Art of Killing.
Oh, sorry. The Act of Killing. The Act of Killing. Which is a very specific pun in the title that I should really have taken note of. Yes, The Act of Killing. Do you want to explain what this film's about?
Yeah, so it is essentially... it's the worst way to start me saying essentially.
That's right.
The director, a man called Joshua Oppenheimer, went to Indonesia... And he contacted the gangsters or the killers from the Indonesian death squads, which around basically in 1965, the military overthrew the government and the military and paramilitary groups and local gangsters just wiped out a lot of the communists. And this is the story of... a number of the gangsters who killed thousands of people, thousands of communists during that time, and it follows them reenacting their crimes.
Taking them around to the scene of the crimes and getting them to make a film about it.
Yes.
Which is the strangest twist on this story. But, I mean, we should say for a bit of backstory as well, that when they say they were killing communists... pretty much anyone who was seen to be anti the regime or ethnically Chinese or left wing or anything was a communist.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're talking sort of McCarthyist version of communism rather than actually a member of the Communist Party.
So, as well as being a normal documentary, the twist is these the killers that he follows, the backstory for them is they used to work as outside cinema, selling the cinema tickets. And they really like the American films in particular. I think that the gangster films are very influenced by.
Yes.
And for them to make money, they wanted to sell the American films. And a lot of the communists didn't want to watch those films. So that's one of the reasons why they turned against them.
Well, communists are sort of very pro-state propaganda, really. So
yeah.
the exclusion of American films is probably part and parcel of that. But
so they the main... killers in this are going gangsters. There's a man called Anwar and one called Herman, and they reenact scenes from their lives however they want to, and they're heavily influenced by American films.
Yeah.
And what is so great about this extraordinary film, and I haven't got enough superlatives to say how incredible this film is.
It's one of those films that I would never feel comfortable trying to describe It's so unlike anything I've ever seen. It's one of those where I would just go, actually, just watch it.
Yeah.
I can't do it justice by describing what it's like to... Like, I didn't, you know, well up and cry. I didn't feel angry. I didn't feel any of these sort of bombastic, large emotions you can be made to feel with violin scores or with melodrama. But it got under my skin so much, this film. It was unbelievable.
You watch it and I think if you're listening to the podcast, just stop and go and watch it now. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything like it. And it's one of those, it's a thing you strive to get when you go to the cinema. And I think we watched The Square a couple of weeks ago, which I think was great, and this was amazing. Documentaries.
I watched Dirty Wars as well, which, yeah. I didn't think it was quite as good as The Square, but was still a very powerful piece.
The documentaries have really outshone the narrative films, yeah. I think, for me, this Oscars. What is terrifying about this is the documentary makers following these killers, and it is verging on comic, which is odd.
Yeah.
How they deal with the monstrosities.
Well, it's almost like their silliness and their love of fiction has grown as a direct reaction to what they've done in their past.
And their naive understanding of the Western culture, which comes across really sort of childlike in a sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But these are people who've killed...
Personally, with their own hands, yeah, hundreds of people.
And they depict, reenact these killings as if it's someone from, you know, they're one of those hidden boss things, taking someone around their company, going, "Well, this is where I put the, this is where I keep the baked beans, and this is where I, this is where we make the sausages." I don't know why you say examples.
You make the sausages, but only keep the baked beans. That, they're made elsewhere.
It's that matter of fact. But what's worse than that is that they think they're making a certain type of their idea of filmmaking, and that it's the ultimate honour to actually having a film.
To be in a film, yeah.
Completely overrides any notion of empathy or the beginning.
Or how they're coming across.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what's almost so wonderful about it, is it needs their naivety, their innocence. I, you know, use that word innocence quite uncomfortably, but...
That noise is, Buddy...
Do you want me to take this noisy toy off him? But it's late.
Good boy.
Buddy the dog... eating a dinosaur.
Sorry about that. Go on, play with something that is less noisy. Go on, play with that.
It's needed for them to be so unaware of how they're coming across. If it was a shrewder, more cunning person who was the subject of this film, they would try and lie and portray themselves as something they're not. I didn't get the feeling that these guys were capable of that.
You know, when they show old films, I think what made me realise as well, as a consequence, is how media savvy the Western person is.
Yes.
Even when you watched, I think, the talent shows that dominate British television, at the start of when they first started doing these, X Factor, you probably have them in every single country.
Yeah.
15 years ago now, when he first started out, the people in them were very naive and they behaved differently.
Yes.
Now, every single person knows how to act when the camera's on them.
It's like they're an actor in this show and they're acting in the style that this show needs them to act in.
But this is... what's refreshing about this is there seems to be no... It's almost like when you watch black and white footage of someone holding a camera and everyone gets excited and gathers around it. There's no sense of... It's like children trying to show off to a camera.
Yeah.
And it has an honesty that I don't think you would get from the subjects in many other cultures. I don't know.
No.
You know, from which is incredible, considering what they're talking about. And that is what's terrifying. They're so honest about the horrific, pretty much genocide, really, isn't it?
Yeah. 2.5 million people that were killed in total during that.
And there's something to do with even like the garish settings and the colours of the, you know...
Why one of them is constantly in drag in the things that they're filming.
Incredible.
Like, this is a mass murderer and he's always dressing up as a woman in like pink chiffon. It's an unbelievable piece.
And he lets them hang themselves on their own nooses, pretty much, I think.
Well, he does. He just lets them talk. Like, he doesn't lead them, seemingly. You know, every now and again he asks a question that feels like a Western eyes view of what they've done, and it's a bit leading. But I think there's only once or twice in the whole film. The rest of it is just, so what else do you want to happen in this movie about you? And they go off and do it.
Yeah.
They recreate the burning of a village. They recreate the torture of a man. But even to the point where the man is clearly innocent.
Yeah.
And they've told him what to say, this friend of theirs who's now acting in it. And they know that the guys are innocent, but they never talk about that really, or very briefly.
The lack of empathy is chilling. Mm. It's utterly chilling.
Yes.
I was gobsmacked by this vision of hell, almost.
Yes.
Where, and I think a lot of people, I read some articles on it. Someone's like, what would happen if the Nazi party had won?
Yes.
What happens if the bad guys win, take over everything, and they're in control? And that's almost the vision you have of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Where that is 100% a reflection of everything that happened. I don't know. I don't know enough about...
Well, interestingly, Joshua Oppenheimer was the director of this film. When it, at one screening in Berlin, I was reading on IMDb, was accused of, this is like... giving the Nazis an opportunity to do a film about the Holocaust, of reenacting the Holocaust. And he said, no, it's nothing like that, because the Nazis aren't still in power to this day and haven't been punished.
Yeah.
That's the truth in Indonesia. These guys are still protected. Not one of them has been punished for these crimes. And they just... But and you can see in this film that in itself is weighing on them.
Yeah.
They're going... There is a part of them that goes, why haven't I been punished for this? I feel it was probably wrong, but nobody's punishing me for it. Therefore, I'll carry on as if it's right.
But what's great about it is, as well, he does a very clever technique. I hope we're not spoiling this for people. Is he films them... documents say he's filming them talking about how they're going to make the film.
Yeah.
And all these truths come out when they talk about it and how they're going to represent it, and they ask each other questions. So he's capturing stuff that they don't even realise he's capturing. And there's moment, and then he plays footage of the reenactments back to them, and they react to that. So there's so many different things going on here. It's about the horror of, you know, genocide.
Yeah.
It's also about what is... You know, the line between good and evil, the line between human and evil, what is that line?
And
there's so many questions.
Self-delusion, you know, the difference between propaganda and what you believe, and how some of these people seem to just blur the two in their minds of if you tell people this is true, then it is true. And, you know, that it's almost like, Orwellian sort of idea.
It's like narcissism. It's like almost like the purest form of narcissism.
Yeah, yeah.
That you wouldn't even dare to put... If you had a villain... this narcissistic or this evil, you would think traditionally that's two-dimensional for an audience to believe.
Well, I've whilst I was watching it, I was thinking, I don't think I've ever seen somebody who I know is a mass murderer portrayed in anything this jovially for this long without any slow-mo or evil music. I don't think I've ever seen it before, where just like, this is the truth of how he is now. You know, he's now an old man, and this happened in the 60s. So, was it the 60s? 65?
65, yes.
I mean, it's an astounding piece. And I have to say, I really enjoyed The Square, and I really enjoyed Dirty Wars, but this one is something else, just from its concept alone. I mean, its delivery is spot on, but it is... sort of essential viewing, I'd say.
The background to it, I was reading, there's lots of good articles online. I think if you look at a Sight and Sound interviews and other few interviews on that, is the director Joshua Oppenheimer. He was in Indonesia making films, so this took 7 years to make. So he was over there talking to a lot of the victims. And if you read this, but about,
I hadn't read this. No.
So he was talking to initially, this is around 2004. He was filming a lot of the communist victims who had their families killed, and filming them going to sort of mass graves. And he said, well, this isn't really realistic. It isn't good. I know he put it in a bit better way than
more eloquent way.
It's not great, you know, filmically, just people. And the family said that you should go and talk to the killers, because they couldn't talk to them because they were still living in fear of the killers. And so he just went and filmed at a farm next door to one where the killers lived, and hoped that they'd see the camera and come out and interact with him. And they did, and they talked openly, and he said about all the deaths. Anwar, who is the main subject of the film, was the 41st mass murderer he talked to. And all of them were as open as he was about it, and spoke about it in that manner. And he was from a Jewish background. A lot of his family were killed in the Second World War by the Nazis.
He's not related to Dr. Robert Oppenheimer of the Manhattan Project, is he?
I don't know.
I mean, Oppenheimer's a fairly
I don't know.
Name synonymous with mass killing, isn't it?
I don't know who that is. Who is that?
Oppenheimer. Basically, he's the I'm the destroyer of the world, destroyer of worlds guy. He's the guy who invented the atomic bomb.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I should know.
He's the father of the atomic age.
Yeah. So that's the background to it, and that's how he. And he found them. You know, he spent 7 years following these people. You can see you can see some sort of effect of it over time. And the film is also about that. How then, towards as it progresses, you sense that age, and you sense them changing and being different people, and reflecting on who they are. Yeah, I think it is one of the most incredible films I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean. Surreal without being ridiculous, it's it's never what you're expecting at any point. You can't take your eyes off it, I think.
Yeah, I've 10 out of 10.
Yeah, for me too, 10 out of 10.
And I think this should win. And this is, of all the films I've nominated, I think Blue is the Warmest Colour. I always bang about that. I think that's amazing as well.
What's that?
Yeah, this is incredible. You have to go and watch this film.
It's interestingly, I watched the standard edit. There is a director's cut available now.
It's 40 minutes longer.
Extra 40 minutes, which maybe not immediately. I mean, it'd be almost too depressing. But I will watch that eventually.
Yeah, he's about lots of things. Anyway, let's go on to some lettuce.
Some lettuce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you what do people need to do if they want to contact us?
Well, if you'd like to email us, then please do so. dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to write on our Facebook wall, if you'd like to write on our Facebook wall, that's facebook.com/filmfandango. Or you can tweet us at filmfandango.
Oh, here's a letter.
Yes.
From someone from Liverpool.
I can't do that. You do that one.
Oh, no. What I try and do is just say, to get into it, Stephen Gerrard's a Liverpool midfielder. Stephen Gerrard! Hello! I'm from Liverpool. I just listened to last week's episode and wanted to address something David had said about 12 years a slave. He wondered whether Solomon was difficult to understand. And passive, because that was how he really was, or because the filmmakers had left bits of the story out. I don't know why I'm going this high, I might even go there. I was really excited when I heard Stephen McQueen was making the film, so I read the book last year. I recently reread it after watching the film. For the most part, the film is faithful to the book, but they omit virtually all the acts of rebellion of Solomon and the other slaves. This makes them come across as more passive than they really were. Blah, blah, blah. He tells you about a lot of other things. I really like Django, and there's something to be said for fantasy revenge stories, but Solomon Northup's book has loads of similar material, and it's all true. For some reason, McQueen and his screenwriter thought it would be better to ditch that stuff. Bizarre. Anyway, here's a question. Have you ever read a book?
That
made the film based on it look poor in comparison. Cheers, Rob. So there's lots of stuff in the middle about bits they've cut out. I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
That is interesting, though, isn't it? That Steve McQueen's chosen to cut the bits of him standing up for himself and trying to escape, trying to rebel.
That would have been one of my criticisms of the film.
Yeah, me too. I think I think that is missing from the character. That is missing from the story, where you go, why isn't he ever tried?
You know? Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'd be interested to read the book. Reading a book that makes the film seem rubbish by comparison. Yeah?
While Dave was saying that, he was waving a dog toy aggressively at my face.
Yeah, it's a sort of black and orange sort of...
sausage.
Sausage, yeah. Waggly sausage.
And that was the same colour as the paramilitaries.
Very true.
In The Act of Killing.
The Act of Killing.
What does that say about you?
Listeners, if you'd like to imagine it, it's a bit like if...
A tiger's tail.
Garfield the cat was hung like a horse.
Oh, my word.
There you go. There you go, bud. Books that make the films of them seem ridiculous. It's tricky when the number of things that I've actually read and seen, both of...
The books are always normally better.
Yeah, because
I mean things like that.
They can get in more depth. They can do more in a book. It's, you know, it's that much more intimate and can tell rather than show. You know, which is a lot easier to do as well.
Ones that stand out for me are The Stand by Stephen King, which is an amazing book, but some terrible interpretations of that.
The Running Man, which is actually a really fun book. Very okay. Orwellian, you know, terrifying thing.
It's short, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite short, but the film has nothing to do with it at all. I would say there's a film called... is it called Series 7 Contenders? Which is probably a bit more like The Running Man, actually. But,
One for me very recent, I think I spoke about it a while back. The Book of the Help, I thought, was amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas the film, once you've read the book, is... awful.
Right. Yeah. I remember thinking about Jurassic Park at the time, actually. I think Jurassic Park's a wonderful film, you know, of its genre, but the book is actually a bit more in-depth. It's got more going on.
Mm.
More about chaos theory and more about, you know, bureaucracy, really, that there will always be a certain amount of chaos in a system, so trusting the system wholeheartedly will always be doomed to fail. There's more themes going on.
If there's one thing I like to have in a book, it's bureaucracy.
I love bureaucracy in a book.
I can't even say it properly. Bureaucracy. It's quite hard
to say. Red tape. Just say red tape.
Yeah. Red tape, yellow tape. One film was quite interesting. I read, all I do in these podcasts is just repeat myself. So just...
Yeah.
You just stop
People
listening.
Love repetition. They love it. They love repetition. They love repetition.
What do people love?
Repetition.
Drive, which is by James Salis, is not. It's interpreted in the film. I thought the film was better than the book.
Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, Driving Miss Daisy goes into Drive. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You just change the car.
Yeah.
Get rid of the old lady.
Yeah. Replace it with a hammer.
Yeah. Fine.
On the back seat. Yeah. No, that's interesting. Well, there's. It lets the film of Drive lets you interpret a lot, doesn't it? You have to bring a lot with you almost because there's a lot of just. Cool music and beautiful lighting going driving around, you know, there's a lots of unsaid things where you have to sort of...
All I wanted to do is wear a scorpion jacket and then against the wall after that.
I know. And did you?
No.
Unfulfilled.
On our Facebook page, Darren Rogers has written to me.
What's he want?
He's got... I don't know what his voice is like. I just do it in my voice. Unlucky. I noticed a lack of animated films in your best films from 2013. Are you not fans, or did nothing stand out? If you had to pick one each, what was your favourite?
Interesting. I didn't see many. I didn't see many films, animated films in 2013. Frozen passed me by. The Croods I had no interest in. I mean, what else was on?
You watched the Wreck-It Ralph, didn't you?
Wreck-It Ralph I thought was fine, yeah. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't brilliant. Did Pixar have one out in 2013?
I don't know.
Monsters University. I thought that was fine as well. It was just sort of a bit less ambitious, a bit less creative, you know, sequel fodder. I thought, you know, it's not going to be a classic.
I watched Paranorman, which I thought the animation was great on that. And it started brilliantly, but was a bit too formulaic towards the end. But
right.
It was very good. I also really loved, I saw last year, but I hadn't seen before, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Ah, yeah. I've not seen it.
It's a great interpretation.
It was the, what's his name? The bloke who did Rushmore. Wes Anderson did it, didn't he?
Yes.
And
we watched the... these aren't really made in the last of these ones we just saw last year. We saw Bonfire of the Fireflies, was it?
Grave of the Fireflies.
Same thing.
You're thinking Bonfire of the Vanities, which is a very different thing.
Bonfire of the Graveflies.
Okay. Yeah, Grave of the Fireflies, which I think we saw the dub version, which knocked it down a couple of points, but still sort of very good.
The problem is, it's quite odd. I always go and watch films by yourself, and look, the animations are aimed at children.
Yeah.
So it's quite odd. And I like to go on Monday during the daytime when there aren't many animations on because
I'm happy watching a kids' movie, you know, Pixar or whatever. But yeah, sitting amongst kids and their mums is a bit odd.
Yeah.
I don't feel that comfortable doing that. That was when I watched Wreck-It Ralph, it was like that. Although with Wreck-It Ralph, these kids wouldn't know what half the references were because they were going back to the golden age of computer games. So just like, it was probably more of a film for me than it was for them.
Stupid little
They idiots. Don't know who Cuba is. They don't know that Wreck-It Ralph is just a sort of pastiche of Donkey Kong. They don't know these things.
They don't know anything.
Don't know anything.
Okay, and we've got another letter in here. Do you want to have a go at reading? Buddy's very excitable. Yeah. What are you feeding him?
Power bars.
Okay.
You know, like any dog.
So it's the Oscars coming up very soon, and this is from Dave Christensen. Don't put any accent on this, because we went out from before and he got really annoyed.
But he's put at the bottom, he grew up in Dorset, but's half Norwegian.
Hang on a minute, I gave him an accent.
Yeah.
This is a running story.
The saga of Dave Christensen.
Talking of men who go to see kids' films, I gave him a voice, which made him sound a bit like a sex offender, and he told me off. And now, he's requesting you've put on a voice on for him. Don't.
Merrick, that's between you and Dave Christensen.
No, don't.
The listeners demand a Dorset Norwegian accent.
But that's, what is a Dorset Norwegian accent?
Dorset's like that, right? Isn't it? That's Dorset.
Yeah.
And Norwegian is like that. So trying to combine the two, I don't know what kind of an accent that would create. It's quite difficult. That's quite fun, though.
That is incredible. Go for it.
Hi, Merrick and David. Thanks for reading my last email. It's a slightly more normal voice. I'm glad you guys enjoyed The Square and The Dirty Wars. I thought I'd send in my predictions for Oscar winners, as it seems I only have to beat Chris Webb to get the prize and using my printer. Here they are. Best Picture, 12 Years a Slave. Best Actor, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Best Actress, Kate Blanchett. Best Supporting Actor, Jared Leto. Best Supporting Actress, Jennifer Lawrence. Best Director, Alfonso Cuarón. Is it cheating that I've just predicted that the winners of the Golden Globes will also win the Oscars? Cheers, Dave.
Yes, it is cheating.
That is cheating. Thank you for your list. That is an ongoing thing, but next week we are going to make our own predictions, so you've got to get them in if you want to get them in.
Hey, and also there's that thing you said as well about a certificate. What was it?
I'm going to make an exclusive Film Fandango winner's certificate for your printout at home with your own ink. But it'll have your name on it and everything. That's exciting. We'll make our own predictions. So if we win, then we might actually end up winning our own prize, which would be a bit embarrassing.
I would love to get a certificate from you, David.
Well, you may well get it if you make your predictions next week. So if you'd like to predict the best picture, director, actor, actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, send them to dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, and the person who gets the most right will win.
It's really good if you email them rather than put them on our Facebook page for this, because we can see them then, and sometimes things get lost on our Facebook page when lots of people post lots of new things.
Get bumped out the bottom.
Yeah. Have you seen any other films? I've seen a couple of other films.
I saw an incredible film, by which I mean a terrible film, called House of Nine.
Where House of Nine?
House of Nine. I saw this just... It was on TV. It's one of those locked room films, you know, like Saw or A Cube or one
Can
of those.
I guess what it's about?
Go on then.
Nine people are in it.
Yeah, but they're in a house.
One of them's a murderer.
No. They are told in a really, really clunky bit of exposition at the beginning by a voiceover from one of the men from Brass Doff that the last one of them left alive will get £5 million. And that's it.
I wish they'd do that on Deal or No Deal.
What's wonderful about this film is it stars Dennis Hopper, Kelly Brook, and Peter Capaldi, and Asher D as well.
When was this out? I've never even heard of it.
But nobody, apart from Kelly Brook, really, and Asher D, are doing their own accent. So Dennis Hopper is playing Irish, and Peter Capaldi is playing English, and neither of them can do those accents as good as they are in other things. And it just adds to the whole sort of bizarreness of this entire film.
2005?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really old.
It's a terrible film. It's a terrible, terrible film. There are no twists, no turns, no nothing. It's just like, ugh.
Is it British?
It's like it's been generated by a computer. Yeah, it's British.
No. Well, House of Nine.
But Kelly Brook wasn't half bad in it. She sort of came across quite well. She can act in her own voice.
Yeah, she's a nice lady.
Yeah, I've met her. She's lovely.
I've watched Stories We Tell, which is a documentary about a lady is made. She was Oscar nominated for something else, I can't remember, about her mother and everyone's relationship with her mother, who I didn't really like it.
Oh, okay.
Some good reviews.
Who's in it?
It's just a documentary about her family.
Of course.
I thought it was a bit too self-absorbed, okay, and not interesting enough.
It's tricky, isn't it? It's
almost that's
a, we're a bit spoilt for documentaries because we've watched so many good ones.
Yeah,
it's actually a very hard thing to do.
I watched Jack the Giant Slayer, whatever that was called. That weird,
CGI fest.
The CGI
thing.
Jack and the Beanstalk thing.
Why? Why did you watch that?
I watched it because it was on Sky Movies, okay, and I didn't want. I thought I would like to. I wanted to go to sleep, but my neighbours were making noise.
Right.
So I wanted to think, what could I find that was inducing, the most coma-inducing experience I could have?
And it's got, what's his name? I want to say Nicholas Lyndhurst. That's not his name.
Nicholas Lyndhurst. From what's the one from name? About a boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Nicholas...
Parsons. No, Nicholas no. Nickleby.
No.
Nicholas...
How many Nicholas do you know?
Nicholas
Holt.
Holt. He's the new Beast in X-Men First Class, of course, as well. Yeah, he plays Jack, doesn't he?
Yes, and there's all... Ewan McGregor's in it.
Oh, I love a Ewan McGregor film. He doesn't do anything
bad. Stanley Tucci, Ian McShane. It is really two-dimensional, but nonetheless, I moderately enjoyed it.
Oh, that's all right, then.
Well, it was really average, actually, but it's just not... I'm glad I didn't go to anyone to pay for it.
Yeah. Wow. Speaking of really average CGI fests, I read a list of the highest grossing films with a female lead in them. And the number one is really depressing. Can you guess what it is?
Films with a female lead...
The most successful female lead film of all time.
What's the one where Meryl Streep and the dingo kills a baby?
That was real box office gold. Dingo's killed my baby!
What was it called?
I can't remember, I've not seen it. I do know the one you're talking about, though. It's not that.
Did Dingo Baby?
No. It's Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
You're kidding me.
Nope. Most successful heroine of all time.
What else was on the list?
Oh, well, you've got, you know, like, Alien is a bit further down the list.
Yeah, surely Alien should be.
No, that's like a number 8 or something. Then, because we're talking about box office pull only, not actually how much people love it.
Are these adjusted with inflation?
Yeah, I think so. And then, what else will have made it? Mila Jovovich, one of hers, will probably have made it, won't it? One of the Resident Evil ones.
Labyrinth.
Nope, Labyrinth wasn't in there. Tomb Raider's quite high. Yeah, but someone needs to do better, is all I'm saying, because Alice in Wonderland can't be the best thing that people... that
Blue Jasmine must be coming up there.
Probably not for box office pull. It has to be a big old family movie to actually make that much
money.
Well,
as we all know, listeners, most people are stupid.
Correct.
And I include myself among that number.
I include you too.
Thank you.
Right. Well, that's enough for this week. We'll be back next week for our Oscars special, or rather our Oscars predictions, and then the next week we'll be talking about the Oscars, I guess.
Did you do the donations bit?
No, I haven't done that. We do this podcast for free, so if you'd like to donate towards our running costs, then you can do so by going to filmfandango.co.uk and following the links from there. And to everyone who has, thank you. It's very much appreciated.
Yes, thank you very much. And have a nice time, all right?
Yeah, do. Just do good stuff, yeah, mates?
Keep watching the films!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.